This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 603. My name, as always, is Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my always co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live on the internet at koop.org. During the internet, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Stay with us. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step out up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Insult you could find the lyrical, satirical, commercial, controversial, and quite frequently the kind. If you possessed a minimal amount of mind, examples should mind.
It is Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. On the show today, we are joined by our dear friend from Pollyanna Theatre Company, Ms. Judy Modish Campbell, to talk to us everything Pollyanna. And then, of course, Nicole and I will have discussions of the world of theater in New York, London, Boise, and Carlsbad, Colorado. Stick with us. Do you recognize that song, Nicole Shiro?
I mean, I do because we were discussing it, but no, not right off the bat. I wouldn't have at first.
Well, okay, but see, here's my nose is growing. It gives you a hint.
It's Cyrano. You know, the only two people I know that sing about noses are Rocky and Cyrano.
What about Pinocchio?
Rocky likes to sing, "My nose ain't broken."
What about Pinocchio?
Is there a Pinocchio musical?
Yep. Prince Street Players did one. I did it in the 70s.
Then I guess we'll put Pinocchio in there with Cyrano and Rocky.
There you go. So the reason why I played that is Christopher Plummer played Cyrano as a quick replacement. Of course, when I first heard that Christopher Plummer passed away, which is why we're talking about him, I was going to play Edelweiss because it seemed logical. But then I read his obit and thought,
"Such a beautiful song."
It is a beautiful song. I love Edelweiss. And I was actually looking forward to playing it. But did you know? So I guess I did not know that much about Christopher Plummer. He was not a nice man, or he had a reputation of not being so nice. He was hard to work with. And he despised Sound of Music.
Gruff would be a good word.
I'm sorry, what?
Prickly and gruff would be the words I'd use.
Prickly and gruff, and arrogant. And he died,
funny because, you know, Miss Julie Andrews, as kind as she is, never had a mean word to say about him.
No, well, she was like Andrews. And she was also like a child when she did that.
If you were that gruff, you'd remember that kind of stuff, you know?
Maybe. Remind me to tell you a tangential story about Julie Andrews and The Sound of Music. But later, he was 91 years old. And he didn't die of old age. Do you know why he died?
Did he get the COVID?
Nope.
What did he die of? Did he fall? He fell.
He fell, right? And hit his head.
Yes, because my uncle passed away this way, and Mom said he was like Uncle Pete. I said, yeah, that's right. He fell and hit his head.
I love how you always bring things around to people in your family.
I have a big family.
So in his obituary, it said he had charm and arrogance in equal measure, and it.
Actually,
and a streak both biblious and promiscuous, all of which he acknowledged. Now, here's an interesting thing. He was replaced by Anthony Hopkins and Coriolanus at the National Theatre in London because the cast voted him out.
I knew that one. And then Anthony Hopkins, which it seems just as gruff and crazy as Christopher Plummer, but apparently not.
So Christopher Plummer called Sound of Music saccharine claptrap, and he referred it to it as S&M or the Sound of Mucus.
You know, it's not my favorite musical, so I can't, you know.
Oh,
but I love that people love it. So, and it's my mom's favorite musical. I have great memories of it because I associate other things with it, but you know, that's fine. I don't want everybody to like the same thing. It's totally okay.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad because that's the case. I love it. So he has had a crazy career. But his biggest thing and his, I would assume his most proudest is his Shakespeare. So he's done like every Shakespeare, and he got Frank Rich from the New York Times gave him a rave in his Iago next to James Earl Jones as Othello. And if I can find the quote, I'll say it, but it was, he evidently just did an amazing job. So he was one of my favorite movies of all time is The Man Who Would Be King, where he played, Rudyard Kipling. Did you see The Man Who Would Be King? It's with Michael Caine.
No, I'm all like, how come I haven't seen this film? And maybe I have, and I just don't remember because I don't remember.
Oh my, well, it was in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, and it starred Christopher Plummer, Michael Caine, and Sean Connery, and it's just an amazing piece.
Oh, that's like a trifecta.
But he was also in Star Trek VI, Syriana, The Return of the Pink Panther, so he's got quite a very, very varied career. Eclectic, yes, that's the word that I was going to come up with. He won, I think, one Tony. And he was in, oh God, there's a lot of Broadway shows. His first one was The Star-Crossed Story in 1964, which opened, 1954, which opened on January 13th, 1954. And interestingly enough, closed on January 13th, 1954.
One night only.
One night only. What a... Yeah, so you know, because it always comes back to me. You bring things back to your family, I bring it back to me. So when I did my Broadway show, we closed in 2 days, and I got nothing after that. He closed in 1 day, and look at his career.
Yeah, well, he was kind of already somewhere, I think, when that closed.
I don't know. So...
70, so yeah, he had, right? Oh, no, 54, you said.
54, yeah. So... the other person we lost this week was Hal Holbrook.
Yeah, I know.
So big, yeah. Big loss time.
I loved Hal Holbrook. Now, he seemed like he was the nice guy you thought he was.
I think he was. And he's best known, of course, for his Mark Twain. He made a career of Mark Twain. But I say he made a career, but he had a huge career in television and film outside of that. And did you know, you probably knew this.
His wife?
Pardon me?
Who his wife is? His wife was?
I didn't say that, but you can go ahead and say that if you'd like.
It was Dixie Carter.
Right, which leads me to, well, I knew you were going to say that because he was also had a reoccurring role on The Golden Girls.
You mean Designing Women?
I mean Designing Women.
Yes, and actually he and Dixie performed together at the Alley Theater a few years ago. They did a show together.
Well, there you go. He's also known...
She passed away a few years ago, didn't she? She's already passed.
I think so. He's also known for a lot of Shakespeare himself, and he played the stage manager in Our Town.
Our Town.
You know, so I have to mention any time the words stage and manager come in the same sentence. He actually sort of fell into his Mark Twain thing where somebody tried to got him to do this Mark Twain sketch to psychiatric patients at a veterans hospital in Ohio.
Okay, I did not know this is how he started the Mark Twain thing.
And here's how it went. He was interviewed by Ruby Holbrook. I'm assuming there's a relation. So the interview went like this. How old are you? 19 in June. Whom do you consider the most remarkable man you ever met? George Washington. But how could you have ever met George Washington if you're only 19 years old? If you know more about me than I do, what did you ask me for? And so at the end of that first performance, there were crickets. So he also had a whole varied career on Broadway, including a couple of musicals, one of which was The Apple Tree, which I just love.
Yeah.
And the other is he was a replacement for Man of La Mancha.
Oh, I did know that. And you know which, what I thought? He'd be an incredible Quixote.
Which he played Quixote. He replaced Richard Kiley. And presuming we have time, we're going to play at the very end of the show. We're going to go out with Dulcinea, Brian Stokes Mitchell singing it. I forgot about this revival. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio was in it, playing Dulcinea. So she's just got a marvelous voice. But his first Broadway show was 1964, played in After the Fall. The New York Times has an article about a couple of streaming song cycles that are of interest. It's three different ones, a song cycle by Sondheim, one by Jerry Herman, and one by a composer I do not know called Schrobersdotter. Unfortunately, one of them is no longer available, but Simply Sondheim, which is about Sondheim, through Signature Theater, is available through March 26th. You I Like is the Jerry Herman piece from Pasadena Playhouse, which is no longer available. And the last one is called Falling Stars, and that's the one with the person that I can't remember the name, but it stars Peter Polycarpou, who's supposed to be just amazing. But I want to take a moment and play a song from the Jerry Herman one, the one that we can't see, and it is from Parade, and it's not the Parade, not the Jason Robert Brown Parade, a little bit more fun one. This is the Jerry Herman's Parade, and it's a musical review, and this is a song, Confessions to a Park Avenue Mother, sung by Charles Nelson Reilly. Let's see if we can enjoy this as a song together.
How very glad I am to find
we have one more little piece of sad news. It's not a death, but it's a kind of a death. Paul Huntley, who did every Broadway show since the early 70s as a wig designer, is retiring. Diana will be his last show.
Oh, he did the... Well, I tell you, that Diana wig is good.
Yeah, well, he's excellent. I had the honor of working with him during Oh Brother in 1981. It's like he did every single Broadway show there was at the time. And there are Broadway stars that put him in their contracts that they would, that he had to do their wigs.
Listen, if I got a really good wig like that, I would put that in my contract too.
Yep.
So that's smart.
He did 60 films along with all these different Broadway shows. I mean, I don't know where he had time. But here's the sad part. The reason why he's retiring is, first of all, there's no work. And he's hit financial hard times. He had to sell his house. He's moving back to England. He's 87 years old. And that's kind of sad.
That is sad.
Yeah. One of his favorites was cats.
Meow.
Yeah, but I just...
Yes, but we should say the famous film, he did the famous Cleopatra braids.
He did. For Liz Taylor.
Elizabeth Taylor.
He preferred straight plays to musicals. He loved Amadeus with all those, you know, those white...
Oh, those are some other great wigs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
he really enjoyed straight plays to musicals. I could see that. that. And you know what? Maintaining wigs in a musical versus a straight play is a whole nother beast too.
And yet he did not maintain. I mean, he made and walked away. He didn't. It's not like he was on the crew and stayed there.
He probably had to have people calling him all the time, like, "How do we fix this?" Or so that would get annoying.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that he probably had a crew of people that worked with him. It's just a thought. He'll be missed in the theater.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah. So we are recording this on Sunday, as we do. Monday, as we do. Yesterday was Sunday, and there was some sporting event that took place yesterday. Did you see it?
The Superb Bowl.
Did you watch it?
The Superb Owl.
Did you watch it?
I watched a little bit, not a lot.
Well, I didn't watch any of it, but I did see stuff in the morning, and there was a thing about in Broadway Briefing this morning about the Broadway people that had done commercials. Three that they talked of. So one was, which I thought was really funny, was Jason Alexander's shirt. It was a commercial for detergent. And the other...
David Diggs was one of them.
Well, hold on. That was going to be my last one, but so we'll just switch to that since you brought us there. You're always three steps ahead of me. Why is that?
You didn't need to be three steps. You looked like you were asking for another one, and that's the only other one I could remember.
There were three, and I couldn't remember the second one. But we're going to listen to the David Diggs one.
Oh, you got a delivery, David.
Yeah, Big Bird. You can get all sorts of things delivered from the neighborhood.
The neighborhood?
All from the people in your neighborhood. The people that you meet when you're walking down the street. They're the master chef.
The burger flipper too.
The corner store owner bagging low fat milk with gum and pink shampoo. They're the culinary artists with delicious cuisines.
That famous cookie shop in the magazine.
All that?
Well, you can also get empanadas down the street.
Mango smoothie, sweet and tart.
From the big shouts to the mom and pops, they can bring it to me a la carte.
They're the people that you meet each day.
The fact that Super Grover was in it was kind of what made it even more epic, because Super Grover is my favorite Grover.
I didn't even know Super Grover existed. But I just love that David Diggs.
I do.
And I resubscribed to Disney Plus, and I just rewatched Hamilton again. And he and Leslie Odom Jr. really shine in that so much. So I just love him. He's one of my faves. And it's nice to have a rapping Sesame Street.
Yeah, I know. And he put empanadas in there, another one of my favorite things in life.
Well, who doesn't like empanadas? And speaking of Disney... Oh my God! So Disney Plus is going to be redoing. You know, we talk about Cinderella here a lot, and they're gonna replay the Brandy Whitney Houston.
I know, isn't that Jason Alexander?
Jason Alexander. Exactly. Whoopi Goldberg, Bernadette Peters. It's everybody's in that. So
it's a really, really good Cinderella. And watching Brandy announce it, she was like a little kid again, so excited.
Oh, I didn't see her announce it, but that's great.
Oh, it's a great little video, and she announces it, and you can see the joy in her eyes of her, like, so excited to announce this. Yeah, I think that's great. I'm surprised it hasn't been up there sooner.
Me too. I guess there's a method to their madness. So let's go off of this half of the show listening to Impossible Possible with the incomparable Whitney Houston and Brandy singing.
Impossible for a plain yellow pumpkin to be.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa.
And Nicole.
You are listening to us on KOP. 91.7 FM. And during the pandemic, folks, we pre-record this puppy.
Yes.
PRP, we like to say.
Mm-hmm.
So during the break, you were just talking to me about some rent info. Why don't you, because I'm unaware.
I saw it in the Broadway briefing this morning that the they're doing a rent reunion. And I know that the one Jesse L. Martin is coming back, and that just makes me excited because I love that man.
Yeah, you know, the I've seen a few Rent things, and he seems to be missing a lot of the time. So I'm happy that he's doing that. He was great.
You know, he went missing for a while, right when at the beginning, because he was on Law and Order forever. But then he stopped doing Law and Order, and then he was still just missing from everything. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kristen Lee Kelly, Jesse L. Martin, Freddie Walker Brown. It's a digital event for March 2nd, and it's featuring original composition created by the Dear Evan Hansen creators. So Pasek and Paul are creating additional content for it.
So this isn't, so it's Rent plus more
I
don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Theater Workshop virtual gala celebrating 25th anniversary of Jonathan Larson's musical, set for the 2nd, but original compositions by Pasek and Paul.
Interesting.
130 Ren alumni will be there.
All right. Well, good. Awesome. That's good. So there'll be a link to that at Offstage on the onair.com. Okay, let's go on down my list of stuff because we don't have a whole bunch of time. So left because we've just got a lot to talk about. Did you see that Come From Away is going to shoot? So they were going to do a film, but instead they decided to shoot the Broadway show. So they're going to come back in and perform it. It takes the cast and crew is 200
I was about to say, did you see the size of the cast and crew? It's insane.
But I'm so thrilled that they made the decision to not make it a motion picture, to do it a film Broadway. It's going to be filmed by the same people that did Hamilton. So, you know, it's going to have a lot of good quality in it. It's such a theatrical piece. I think that making it a movie that's like would take some of the magic
away. Some of it. You know, Kevin Turoff, the real big Kev from the musical, lives here in Austin. We should get him on one day. He's been a big part of the musical, and when they opened in Ireland, like, he's been a big part of them in creation of the musical.
I know. So going back to the Tonys, there was an article with Broadway News and Aaron Tveit, which was kind of interesting. As you know, Aaron Tveit is the sole nominee for Best Actor in a Musical for Moulin Rouge. He could still lose.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think so is funny. Interesting.
It was. I listened to that that interview. It was interesting. I just adore it.
So he, and of course, Tony's still don't have a date, which I don't know. It's like waiting for Godot.
I know, because you and I talked about that last week. And then
we did.
There was an article like the Tonys, and I'm like, but you still don't have a date.
But he's talking about the producers have been very, very good communicating with the cast and crew of Moulin Rouge, and they say that it will come back. It's not if, it's when. So that's good.
I was very confused. I saw some of the shows in the West End giving dates to come back, and I can't figure that out because they're closed. Like, Tina Turner musical announced June 3rd, they're coming back. And I'm like, but you're completely closed down. I can't understand that.
I've not understood the whole West End because they've been opening and closing like a lot. It's like a roller coaster ride.
At least. And so now there's another new date. And I'm like, I am very confused by this. And the people, my friends in England yesterday were just as confused.
Well, there you go. So there is going to be a streaming Songs for the New World, which actually has been out for a while, or not out, the news has been out for a while, and that's the Jason Robert Brown song cycle show.
Great music in it.
But here's something interesting. I've never heard of this, and it's out of the UK. It's called Stream.Theater, and it's a streaming theater site, sort of like Broadway HD and Broadway On Demand. So that's where it's gonna be. It's behind a paywall. Not terribly expensive.
But it's got Ramin Karimu, Rachel John, Cedric Neal, and Rachel Tucker in it. That's it. Are you a Jason Robert Brown fan?
Yeah, I like his stuff. I mean, I'm not like fanatic-y crazy, but I really enjoy everything.
All right. Well, if we have time, right here, we're going to hear Shoshana Bean sing Stars in the Moon from the New York City Center production of Songs for a New World. Here's Shoshana.
I met a man without a dollar to his name.
All right, Shoshana Bean is so good. So that actually had, that version of Songs for the New World had some incredible people in it.
Yeah. But, you know, they like to sing the songs. The singers like to sing the songs. Good stuff.
They do indeed.
You just want to sing.
So let's listen to our interview for this week. We spoke to Judy Modish Campbell of Pollyanna Theater Company? I can't speak. Let's just listen. Hey, Nicole, I have often considered you to be an optimist.
I like to think so.
Yeah, I mean, you have an attitude that's always cheery. One might call you a Pollyanna.
Not the full kit and caboodle.
Well, I have a feeling that when we go into the Zoom machine, we're gonna filter some of that Pollyanna energy. Should we?
Okay, let's do it.
Let's go in, open the door, and see who we see.
Okay.
Oh my God, it's Judy Modish Campbell.
Hello.
Judy Modish Campbell, the artistic director and founder of Pollyanna Theater Company.
You got it.
We had our Pollyanna on.
We had a feeling that there was something Pollyanna-ish going on around here, which is, I have to tell you, we need a little bit more Pollyanna.
Well, you know, I think even in the best of times, we need some Pollyanna, you know? And so we got to keep our optimism well-tuned so that when we need it, we've got it.
I agree. So Pollyanna Theater Company has been around for ages. As we know, you've been a guest on the show several times, but you haven't been on in a while. Just tell folks a little bit quickly about Pollyanna.
Well, we are a group of adult professional theater artists that create original theater for young audiences. So a lot of the time when people hear that it's a children's theater company, they think, you know, oh, the children are acting. It's like, no, the children are our audience. So it's all adults, professional actors, designers, and playwrights that make original plays for young audiences. And some of our audiences are as young as 2 and 3 years old. And some of them are as old as, you know, 100, but we try to create things that will appeal to the child that is still alive and well in every single one of us.
Well, you know, that's such the important thing about children's theater. So I, like many people, grew up, you know, working in children's theater. We, you know, a lot of us make our start there. Nicole, you can't see her, but she's pointing to herself.
Me too. I love doing it.
But what's fun about children's theater is to make it fun for both children and adults. That's my big beef with shows like Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast is fun for kids. I don't find anything fun about Beauty and the Beast from an adult perspective. So I love what Pollyanna does in that regard.
Oh, thank you. I think that everybody who's in the theater space, whether it's inside a theater or outside in an outdoor event, or whether it's parents and kiddos staring into their computer screen as it is right now in the virtual space, everybody who's participating in that audience should be having their own audience aesthetic experience. And I have always loved when children are laughing at one thing on the stage, and then a few minutes later, the adults in the audience are laughing at something else, and you see the children look at their parent or teacher who's with them and look at them like, what are you laughing at? Because you kind of know at that point there's going to probably be a conversation later about that, whatever that was. It was like, what did you think was so funny about that? And anything that we can do to get people talking and sharing about their audience experience, I think is a step in the right direction.
And that's one of the important things about theater for children, theater for young audiences, and some of the things that you do. All of your shows have a message, do they not?
Yes, and we try really hard not to beat anybody over the head with whatever that might be. I think that's one of the reasons why working with really good playwrights is important, because the meaning in the play comes directly out of the character conflict and whatever the real story is that's going on. And I think if you build a good human story, you automatically get meaning. And our playwrights do a great job of weaving that meaning into the story, whatever the story is at hand. I think, you know, sometimes you get a draft of a play and a moral to the story is sitting bald-faced in a piece of dialogue. And I always then go back to the playwright and ask them to bury that a little better. It's like, good, could you bury that? You know, could you do a comb over on that bald spot right there? Because we gotta hide that a little bit.
Well,
children see right through that.
Exactly. I was going to say, you don't want to insult your audience. And so many of us adults talk down to children when we don't need to.
I think they also the moral and the lesson is more impactful when they discover it on their own.
When they discover it at the same time that the protagonist does.
Yes.
And I think that's what makes a strong youth protagonist, is they're going on a journey and we go right along with them. And well, as they learn something, we do too.
Absolutely. And I'd like to encourage our audience to look at your website, PollyannaTheaterCompany.org, and look at the page of the actors, designers, playwrights, and the level of people that are supporting the work that you do. I think they'd be very impressed.
Oh, well, thank you. I am very, very blessed in that, you know, we are in our 20th season. Pandemic or no, here we are. We're in our 20th season. And
you don't even look 20 years old.
Oh, God, that's because we're talking on the phone. Everybody looks good on the phone. The thing that I think is best about Pollyanna is that there's a group of people that have been working together for a really long time that respect each other's work and support each other's work. And I think it shows on the stage. We've got people that have been with us for 14 or 15 seasons at this point.
Yeah. Well, that brings me to the point. Right now, you've got you're doing some performances, live performances, virtually, correct? Right now,
yes, we are. We are every Saturday afternoon through the middle of March. We're doing a piece for preschool audiences called "The Missing Dinosaur Adventure," and the actors lead the children through an adventure to find baby dinosaur. And it's done through Zoom. There's a sense of dramatized storytelling to it, where the actors are in role, but they're also leading the children to be physically active. To find baby dinosaur. There's times when they're all swimming to an undersea cave to look for baby dinosaur. There are times when they're all climbing and crawling to get to the top of a volcano to see if they can find baby dinosaur. And they're encouraged to make a dinosaur mask that they can wear during the show. or if they want to have a costume, that's great. We've had some kiddos do absolutely amazing backdrops for themselves. It's always amazing when the camera comes on their, you know, their little square of the Zoom performance, and you see what they have brought to the table. And it's very, very dear. And at the same time, you know, even if they are sitting there in their pajamas and their mom and dad did the best they could just to get them present, you know, they're having a great time. And it's been a real eye opener. You know, is it the kind of theater I want to do forever? No. But the children and the parents are hungry for a creative opportunity.
Yeah.
And you know, they're hungry for the togetherness that a drama class can provide, or that a shared audience experience can provide. We've had lots of kiddos that call their best friend, and their best friend gets a ticket too. And so they're, you know, virtually together in the audience. The same way they might be if they were going to see the play, you know, at the Long Center together.
Awesome. So, you know, Zoom, we feel like we lose a little intimacy in Zoom. So I know that when I'm in a large Zoom meeting, I don't see everybody on my screen. Do you limit the amount of people that can participate in this?
Yes, we do. We try really hard to keep it to no more than 12 or 14 children during the Saturday afternoon performance, for that very reason. So everybody can be visible. So that's part of the challenge for us. So quite frankly, is, you know, we're trying to be very aware that families are facing some real financial burdens right now. And so we do have a, you know, pick your own price kind of a structure. But when you're keeping your audience so small, you know, it's a victory on a Saturday when we break even, ladies. You know? It's like, woo, you know, we made it. So but it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. And we're working on new ones right now. And we also have mystery plays that we're doing for older kiddos that actually have scripts that go out to the participants in advance. And they, you know, are actually assigned a role. And then when the play starts, everybody is cast as a character, and they solve a mystery together with the help of the actors, of the Pollyanna actors.
Oh, that's and so fun.
Those are for available for kiddos that, you know, can read well enough that they can be successful. Usually around third to fifth grade is what we produce those for. And those are available for school groups. I guess right now we probably have three different titles going, and we also have a super amazing Zoom performance that's social studies based that really celebrates the women's right to vote, and features Edith Wilmans she was the first woman to be elected to the House of Representatives in the state of Texas in the 1920s. And it's a look at her life and her struggle to help the women of Texas gain the right to vote.
Wonderful. What is the name of that piece?
That one is Edith Wilmans on her campaign tour.
Awesome.
And that one is available for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade classes. And that's going amazing. The students at the end of it are encouraged to figure out who their representatives are right now and do some letter writing about the things that concern them. the same way that Edith did in her day.
Great. So,
that's cool.
We're just about out of time. First of all, tell folks where they can go to get information about this wonderful stuff.
All they have to do is go online to PollyannaTheaterCompany.org. And all of the information about what's available is there. They can, you know, purchase a ticket if they want to right there online, or give us a call and we can answer any questions they might have.
Beautiful. So tell me in our last like 30 seconds, what is Pollyanna's plan for the future? Do you see yourself presenting in person anytime in the near future?
You know, I don't see us doing anything until possibly in the summer. So much depends upon our ability to have a venue. And our regular venues, like the Long Center, and we've also produced at the Carver Cultural Center, of course, are not open right now. And so we're trying to figure out our way forward to possibly do something in one of those spaces outdoor. And see if we can't do something live this summer. But everything depends upon our COVID numbers and when parents feel comfortable having their children out and in a group.
Yep, got it. Well, Judy Monish Campbell, thank you so much for joining us at Offstage and On the Air and sharing with us what Pollyanna Theater Company is up to.
Well, you guys are the best, and I deeply appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate everything that both of you do for our community. The arts community is amazing in Austin, and you do such amazing work in supporting all of us. It's deeply appreciated.
Very well said.
Thanks, Judy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's interesting if you go to their website to see, you know, where they came from. They talk about how they got their name, and I'm one of the ones that, and I don't have the information right here, but Pollyanna. Of course, we all use it in our vocabulary these days to mean somebody who is sort of naive and just happy about everything. I didn't realize where it came from. It's a character from a play. So we're going to go away with Dulcinea, Man of La Mancha, the dulcet tones of Brian Stokes Mitchell. And I didn't realize, I mean, I was listening to this. He's got a very classically trained voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love me some Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Well, who doesn't? I like everybody with three-word names.
I do like people with three-word names.
James Earl Jones.
I do like the three-word name, yeah.
All right. We'll see y'all next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye!
Au revoir!
I have dreamed thee too long. Never seen thee or touched thee, but known thee with all of my heart. Half a prayer.